I'm Whitney Powers, and I'm your host today for the series Small Talks, Big Ideas, a weekly 30-minute show, plus or minus, that occupies a collaborative space shared by four of Charleston's advocacy organizations, including Low Country Local First, the Coastal Conservation League, Charleston Moves, and If You Were Mayor. Speaking of If You Were Mayor, we are today welcoming Mayor-elect John Tecklenburg to join us in a discussion about his vision for livability, which is one of the If You Were Mayor sort of hallmarks, and among other things that he may vision for the city's future. Welcome, John, and congratulations. Can I call you John?
Sure, absolutely. Okay.
And congratulations on your election. I understand that at a recent dinner hosted by the Post and Courier that Vice President Joe Biden sort of expressed some sympathy for the position that you're now in, following on the heels of such an esteemed a mayor as Joe Riley. I believe he used the phrase, poor son of a gun. That said, I'm sure you are actually quite excited by the possibilities. But aren't you a little nervous about what you're getting into?
Well, a little bit. But first, let me thank you, Whitney, and thank If I Were Mayor effort that you led throughout the last year. I was one of the first people, I think, to sign up on the website and followed the great suggestions that were proffered and offered through your efforts. And I just think it was an incredible effort, and it's what I believe we need to continue in terms of gathering input from our community as to what makes Charleston such a great place and can make it a better place. But it was kind of uplifting to get a shout out from the vice president. We were at the dinner. I wasn't expecting it. And he started talking about me and, how sorry he felt for me to be following Joe Riley's footsteps. And that was kind of the repeating theme during the campaign,
Right.
Joe is a legend. He's the dean of America's mayors. And the expression, those big shoes to fill, has been there throughout the campaign. And I am going to respectfully ask the mayor when I'm sworn in to take those big shoes home with him. I got my own shoes to wear.
And that hopefully are about the right size.
But the other good thing is Vice President Biden, he also offered if there was anything he could do to help us. Of course, he's only got a little over a year left, but you never know. I might be needing his help on something.
Well, and maybe you'll have that hotline phone number, that's for sure.
That's right. I know his key staff member already.
There you go.
There you go.
Well, we know that there have been a lot of conversations in the past few weeks between you and Mayor Riley, and we guess that you've been getting the lowdown on efforts, initiatives, projects that are in the pipeline, for instance. And most of us suspect that Joe is leaving you with a fairly full plate.
Absolutely. There are a lot of good things in the works. And so, as projects in the city go, and I worked for the city before, so I know this, some things take time. And, as the city council meeting the other day had a number of items up for approval, some of which got deferred until next month, which will be my first city council meeting, to come through planning and kind of complex development projects, they take a little time to matriculate. And so there is a lot on the plate, and we're going to work those as best we can. And there were a number of things. Tourism management, quality of life is an example. I mean, there was an exhaustive study done by a tourism committee, and they came up with lots of good recommendations for managing tourism and trying to improve quality of life downtown. And so I don't need to recreate the wheel on that. I just need to pick up those good recommendations and move forward and try to implement them. So I got to, work on those things that are on the plate, as you say, that are good, and then move forward with the newer initiatives like revitalizing West Ashley that I talked about during the campaign.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So, in fact, you did mention along the campaign trail that you wanted to kind of take a deep breath. I'm sure you're planning some some downtime during the holidays. But you're also going to enter the office. You want to do some things like a performance audit and review of those existing plans, such as that tourism management plan that might be sitting on the shelves. And do you see this moment then as a way to learn more about everything ahead of you, or even maybe allow you to step away from anything that, that you want to reconsider or recalibrate to your...
Well, I think West Ashley is more an example of moving forward with some revitalization and beautification and completing the Greenway. I mean, there's some good initiatives out there we need to start and finish. When I referred to taking a breather or taking a breath, I was referring mostly to the concern we have about growth and where it should occur and how dense it should occur. And so we do plan to have a review of our zoning, particularly commercial zoning and density, and just make sure it's kind of in sync with what our community would like to see in our long-term plans. And that would include a review of the gathering place zonings and what that really entitles people to do and what that looks like at the end of the day, because I think it's pretty safe to say at this point that the first gathering place out of the box, the one over on Maybank Highway, hasn't exactly turned out the way that, that folks had anticipated. It's supposed to be a mixed use where people can live, work, and have a variety of uses, and it's turned out to be almost completely residential.
And complex.
So that isn't what folks had in mind when the gathering place zoning was first proposed, and that was some years ago. So I want to take a look at what a gathering place zoning means, and that's actually on the agenda for January, maybe not my first meeting, but the second one. So we're going to take a quick look at that. I also want to take a pause and take a look at our hotel entitlements just downtown. You know, we've got a number of hotel projects on the books, and I think we need to ask the question, you know, how much is enough in terms of hotel rooms on the peninsula and what that means to future growth and quality of life. So by taking a pause, it's mostly a planning review of our zoning and density in different parts of the city.
A reboot a little bit.
A reboot a little bit. That's right. There you go.
So you have been incredibly positive, and I don't, you know, throughout the campaign, it's just, that spirit has certainly carried you through much of the sort of grueling days of the last year, I think. And I would like to say that that's been an inspiration to those of us who follow politics in any level, because especially these days, I mean, you know, it's just so refreshing to have seen someone prevail in this instance, who just refused to go down the road of throwing punches but getting things done once you're the mayor, you know how that works with your affability. I hope you're maybe considering hiring a heavy in order to do the kneecap breaking and all those kinds of things that might be called for when you're mayor.
Well, thank
you. In the back room, you know, maybe not in public.
Well, I do like to think of myself as a very positive person and optimistic. You know, I always want to try to improve things and make them better and not focus on the negative and all like that, and the blame game. I'm just trying to think forward about what we can do to improve our quality of life in Charleston. And so I don't know that I have to be a heavy, but what I plan to do is for whatever issue comes forward, and I can tell you there are folks, you know, already knocking on my door wanting to come talk about this, that, or the other, and my question will always be, you know, how does this impact the quality of life in Charleston going forward?
Right.
So if someone comes to the mayor's office and they want to propose whatever, I'm going to ask them that question. How is what you want to do
right
going to positively impact the quality of life in Charleston. And based on that lens, or that, you know, looking at it through those eyeglasses and asking that question, I think it's going to be easy to say yes or no.
Well, I know that that's, and I mean, I would hope that that positive aspect actually sort of extends to maybe bringing some people out who want to speak for things. I mean, so often at public meetings and things, we have a lot of the not in my backyard.
Right.
Some of that is attitudes that people bring with them from other places, that you know, they're not necessarily processing what living in Charleston or living in Charleston might be different from where they came from and that sort of thing. And I'd love to think that we can overcome some of that not in my backyard to see some positive changes in the big picture.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that I think it's it would maybe be an encouraging sign to see some of that, but that's difficult to say, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, people to say, come on, we need you to speak up for something. It's not very difficult to find people who are willing to speak out against something, I guess.
That's right.
But you're a good example of the for something. And
well, thank you.
And we're looking forward to sort of seeing how that influence sort of permeates throughout the area. And you have detailed a rather extensive, comprehensive plan as part of your campaign. And if you were mayor, is obviously very interested in the topic of livability and quality of life,
mm-hmm.
and which was an integral part of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's of particular interest to our listeners. Your plan has a number of very specific initiatives that would seem to be things that could be assigned a certain priority. And, you know, we talk about the president's coming in and they're having those first 100 days in office. And do you maybe have some thoughts about those first 3 months or 100 days and what you think your highest priorities might be, apart from some of this sort of audit and those kinds of things? What item on that agenda would you like to see sort of moving forward?
Right. Well, thanks. And I think this may not sound like a bold initiative, but I want to make sure that we have a smooth transition. You know, we have had one great mayor for 40 years, and so I'm working hard right now just in my existing and some new relationships with staff and city council, and making sure that the lights stay on and I'm ready in case there's some emergency that comes up. I'm getting prepared on some things that I hadn't been familiar with, but smooth transition is important. Beyond that, we're going to begin the groundwork for some of those quality of life initiatives and issues that we talked about in the campaign. One specific thing I'll start on right away is this idea of merging our citizen services, you know, into a more cohesive department and response to our citizens by setting up a single service line, so to speak, both phone number and new technology, like getting an app on your phone where you can call in or report requests for city services from anything. Have a one-stop center and phone number and email and app on your phone where you can connect with the city about basic city services,
right,
and try to make that simpler. So that's one of the things. You know, flooding has come to our attention with all these rainstorms and tidal flooding that we've had, and that's more of a long-term thing. And city council, by the way, did pass a little millage increase two meetings ago that's going to give us a little more income over the next from here on out to work on some of these flooding projects. So I want to be very attentive to starting working on those. The West Ashley revitalization is really important to me, not just the commercial districts, but connecting things like the bikeway and the greenway, finishing off the improvements to the greenway and try to connecting our park space, West Ashley, trying to beautify our streets. Again, these things don't happen overnight, but these are some of the initiatives that I plan to start working on in the first 100 days.
Well, that rather small sort of effort at Avondale certainly seemed to make a huge difference in terms of making a center or something really come to life, and it would certainly be nice to see that happen, you know, in other places along 17.
I used Avondale as kind of my example of a commercial node near residential that works.
Right.
You know, it's got a mixture of stuff. People in the neighborhoods like the shop there. They even go out at night there. My son just bought a house around the corner in Westwood, and it works. And so I understand that you don't duplicate it. You want, you know, every area to have its own individuality and kind of uniqueness and flavor. But for lack of a better description, if you were able to drop Little Avondale's, you know, along Sam Rittenberg in the appropriate place, and the new West Ashley Circle at Bees Ferry and Glenn McConnell becomes like an Avondale with its unique character, but can serve the nearby neighborhoods so they don't have to get in their cars so much to drive to
right.
enjoy, you know, going out at night or having basic services. I think it'll make Charleston more livable, and it'll also help our congestion problem.
Well, and that's certainly on a lot of people's mind, and we'll probably pick up on that discussion a little bit further down into the program.
Right.
So I would like to shift gears to think not just about what's around the corner, but further down the road.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure there's lots of uncertainty in transitional, and there are probably going to be some headaches as you get familiar with balancing sort of day to day with big picture thinking. I mean, there's always that always seems rather, you know, mind boggling to think that there are day to day things but still that big picture thinking. I mean, I would point out that, you were talking about this app for, those routine matters that come up around town. And I did want to note that I was told by one of the presidents of a neighborhood association who said, you know, one of the best things they found about having these, I guess Mayor Riley has periodic meetings mm-hmm. with the neighborhood presidents. And she noted to me, she said, you know, if I have an issue in my neighborhood and I bring it up at that meeting, someone on staff calls me the next day. And to get more details, to make sure that it's on the agenda, that it's and they feel that that's a very responsive and a very good tool. And I'm sure, I don't know whether that's been brought to your attention, or I'm sure you're familiar with that process. But I just wanted to point out that was something that someone around has mentioned to me mm-hmm. to say that yes, that's an effective tool because I feel like there's a response time.
Yes.
You know, a real connectedness. And so so I'm sure that's something that you want to put in your notes to carry forward, because it might not sort of come up in sort of a note-taking process
that's
in
right.
the transition.
That's right. Well, the city has helped develop a neighborhood association network throughout the city. There is 112 organized neighborhood associations. There could actually be some more. There's some neighborhoods in the city that have not formally organized in that sense, but there are some that really have done a great job of organizing, and then there's even coalitions of mm-hmm. neighborhood associations, and like the Downtown Coalition, and there's a West Ashley group around Northbridge, so they'll even combine six or eight neighborhood associations to have even a bigger voice. And so that's a great system. It's working. I plan to continue being attentive to the associations. I do believe, however, that there are a lot of folks in our community, and I think a lot of younger folks, that don't participate in that
right.
style of community engagement. And so I think we need to reach out and start some new ways of connecting with people. I went to New Mayor's School last week, and there was this graduate student at Harvard who originally was from Hong Kong, and she has worked on devising this town hall online concept. It can be used for free. I mean, there's not even any charge for it. So I'm investigating starting to use that so that in addition to the traditional neighborhood associations, we will try to start having town hall meetings online. And by the way, just in terms of city council meetings and BAR meetings and planning commission meetings, I plan to stream those online, and maybe it's something that OHM Radio would be interested in picking up as well, to do it just on an audio basis, but to really try to make Charleston's government more transparent and open and
participatory.
Participatory, yeah, absolutely.
That's great.
I think that's a good thing.
I think that's terrific. That really, I mean, that sounds pretty amazing.
We have the technology today. We just need to put some of it to use. And again, some of these things may take me a little while to get in place, but
well, I know, with if you were mayor effort, we've sort of become aware just through general research of so many things that are happening, percolating out there that are really involved with civic engagement and how, which is obviously our effort, but also just in the sort of routine matters and a lot of discussion in that world is, ways to really make technology integral. I mean, to basically embrace it,
right,
and use it to its best, and update the city's website.
Right.
I think that would be really great.
Yeah, the website needs to be updated. And I hate to get back to my app on the phone, but, I was riding up East Bay Street the other day, and my car wheel, sunk down in this drainage grate that had sunk about almost a foot below the surface of the street, and it needs to be repaired and raised up. And of course, I'm the mayor-elect, so you might expect me to call, which I did, our Department of Public Service to
right.
report it. And most citizens, wouldn't probably know who to call or, take that effort. But if we make it a little easier to where almost everybody has a smartphone today, if you could just take a picture of that and the GPS magic knows where you are and, hit the send button and have it come to the city, and you don't have to care about it getting the right person, will take care of that for you. I just want to make it easier because we need our citizens to be engaged, to be the eyes and the ears of our community and making it better and give us suggestions and participate, not just on little fix-it things, infrastructure, but helping people, when they see someone in need or a neighbor needs some help, all kinds of things.
Well, and we've even considered things like if you're traveling and you see something that would really be an interesting, to see happen here. Oh, this could happen in Charleston. And I do want to sort of talk about some big picture issues. Mm-hmm. And, we've seen and heard throughout the campaign that there are a number of those that come to mind. And some of these have a lot of overlap. We have transportation, affordability. You've already mentioned flooding.
Right.
Racial equity is obviously something that's sort of really become at the forefront, not just of a local conversation, but a national conversation. And most of these require relationship building. And not only with people who live in Charleston, but with other municipalities and state and federal level. And mm-hmm. I'm assuming, and you might just want to touch on how you're beginning that kind of relationship building. And you mentioned Joe Biden's phone number. That's starting somewhere. And but I'm sure that you're the legislative delegation, and that there are certainly a lot of other kind of people. I mean, you had what I might call a relationship with Leon during the campaign.
Yeah.
and so we or I should say Representative Stavronakis, but
that's
we
right.
we certainly need the ability to kind of draw on resources that are sort of outside just the local ones to the best that we can.
Well, I certainly feel like just my being active in this community in many ways my adult life has led to some good relationships that I already have. But yeah, I'm working on them every day, starting with my existing and new relationships with my city council members and with city staff. But a great example is I went to the new mayor's seminar at Harvard last week, and there were new mayors from around the country, and I now have, I think, good personal relationships with the new mayor of Nashville, Memphis, Austin, Texas, Alexandria, Virginia, Boston, Philadelphia. And what I really hit you in the face going to this was, even though the seminar material was very helpful and informative, the relationships with the other mayors is good too, because, you know, most of the problems or challenges we might be dealing with in Charleston, you know, have been seen by some other city somewhere else in the country, and there are lots of good ideas and lots of things that have already been put in place, and they actually made the comment, hey, if we've got a good idea, it's okay, you can steal it and just rename it, you know. There's no pride of ownership among the mayors, you know, we're not really in competition with each other, we it's a really great support group. And so I do plan to be active in what's called the U.S. Conference of Mayors. They meet a couple of times a year and have that kind of interchange mayor to mayor, and you find out what's going on, best practices around the country, and the organization actually kind of keeps track of those things. So, you know, you got a problem with whatever, you can call the U.S. Conference of Mayors, and they say, well, in Denver they're doing this, and I talked about a number of those things during the campaign, like the housing initiative,
right,
in Austin, Texas. So it was really cool to meet the new mayor from Austin, Texas, and be able to talk with him about the things that I was in fact talking about during my campaign.
So, oh, that's great.
So doing some good networking.
Well, I think that's an exciting possibility. I mean, we've heard in the past, I'm familiar with the Mayor's Institute, which Joe Riley was very much involved with, and I know that he's been a mentor to many mayors, and now it's your turn to find a parallel. He's still going to be available to, I feel sure.
Oh, yeah.
And not only will you have him sort of nearby, maybe even on a hotline, but you'll have these other mayors as well. So, it does seem that many of the emerging national discussions on racial equality, just to shift a little bit,
sure,
are really looking at Charleston's response to the incident at Mother Emanuel. As a point of departure, earlier this fall, Gwen Ifill and her talented team of journalists from the PBS NewsHour were here. Mm-hmm. It was a four-hour session that was a bit more stormy than the actual broadcast would have us believe.
I was there.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mm-hmm. thought I saw you, and within the last month, the singer Pharrell Williams attended a town hall at the church as part of A&E's Shining a Light, a concert for progress on race in America. And last week, there was Ken Burns and Henry Louis Gates, who held a conversation of sorts at the Gilliard Auditorium to introduce some of their works in progress on the topic and to help raise money for the Charleston's planned International African American Museum. And these conversations have prompted many to ask, really, what kind of action can occur to better the relationships between the races? And mm-hmm. And how can we address some of the challenges that face us in light of pressures like gentrification, inadequacies of the public education system, low wages? You and your wife, Sandy, have been very, very involved with many of the members of marginalized in the African American community through organizations like South Carolina Strong, Crisis Ministries, and the Charleston County Human Services Commission. Do you have some particular thoughts, maybe on areas such as adequate and affordable housing or economic opportunities and transportation that can actually, or even some other areas that could play a part in helping to level that playing field, and maybe how do you hope to bring more of that, you know, more of that into your administration or into the way that you sort of communicate with the with the city.
Well, thanks.
Big topic.
That's a big topic to get around. And in fact, Sandy and I just last night attended, there's a national conference of black churches that's having a reconciliation conference in Charleston that ends today, I think. We attended their one of their meetings last night. And Charleston is, you know, kind of at the forefront, not just of national but international attention because of the remarkable and loving way that we responded, you know, in the wake of the terrible tragedy at Mother Emanuel on June 17th of this year. And I really felt deeply after that occurred that, you know, there was a shift in the question about even this mayoral race from what happens after Joe Riley to, you know, what happens after Mother Emanuel and what are we going to do to make a difference? And admittedly, the things that you're talking about, like housing policy and economic justice and disparities in our schools are, wow, talk about not being quick, easy fixes. Those are all systemic, you know, long-range kinds of issues and challenges that we face. And I believe that those are the things that we have to work on to kind of prove our mettle, to show the world that it's more than just how we respond after a tragedy. You know, we're recognized for having done that with love and compassion. But what's most important going forward is, you know, what are we going to do to make economic opportunity really available to our whole community? And then you get back into the root problem of, is our education system in Charleston really doing its job so that we have a level playing field for, you know, economic opportunities? So it all gets intertwined, and housing policy so that there's, you know, more affordable product in a city that has become very popular and has led to, you know, a market-driven situation where housing prices have really gone up, particularly in the city and the peninsula. And it's more than racial. It's economic. It's, you know, regular working families can't afford to live, you know, at market prices in our city anymore. And that's a really crying shame. And it's not an easy overnight fix. And actually, the city has tried to work on providing affordable housing and programs like our workforce housing program. But it's clear that what we're doing is not enough, and it's going to take a new approach. And just talk about housing for a minute of, you know, increasing density at properties that the city controls through its housing authority, maybe partnering with some private investors to let them do the building, but, you know, have a percentage, some equity in the game so that part of new private developments have a share of the units being affordable. Looking at community land trusts, that it's kind of a new thing around the country where the charitable and nonprofit community gets involved and buys property where affordability can be ensured long term. So we got to bring some new options to the table and work on these things. And again, I view these as long range processes to put into place because they're not overnight fixes. But if we set those processes in place to show that we're working on it, that we're making progress, those are the kind of things I want to do as mayor.
Well, and that's really refreshing. I mean, it's glad to know that you've sort of got this in your sights. Yeah. I think the same holds true probably in the business community. I remember The College of Charleston had a seminar on the history of retail on Upper King Street. And I remember going to a seminar about attending one particular session, and they invited some of the old families who had had businesses on King Street, Berlinski, Bluestein, the Sokol family, and a number of those folks talked about when their families immigrated to the U.S., mm-hmm. came here. They had many of them came. They were tailors at a time. There were something like 150 tailors on King Street before you could buy off the rack, right? Mm-hmm. And they had carts that they would use to, they would work out like a food truck, you know, the equivalent, until they could afford, to have a building or to rent space and that sort of thing. And it would be good to sort of have a sense of, is there a way to likewise encourage commercial and economic kinds of things? Because commercial space is getting, for small offices, my own office is outrageously expensive,
right.
and I would hate to find myself kind of having to leave downtown for right. that reason. So I do know that there's certainly a lot more
commercial parallel to gentrification.
Absolutely.
There's been demand for space. We have a special city, and the peninsula downtown particularly is in high demand. That's driven prices up. And so, be it in the Neck area or West Ashley, this is a focus that I will pursue for revitalization and trying to, create opportunities for some new commercial space that can be more affordable than being on King Street.
Right.
There's so much government can do. You can't dictate what prices the market will bear for rental space on King Street without having some kind of rent control, and I don't foresee us going in that direction, believe me. So you got to try to provide, just like we will for affordable housing, to encourage some commercial development in other parts of the city that can be more affordable. And it may add that my family, the Tecklenburgs, when they came over in the 1850s, my great-great-great-grandfather started a corner grocery store, I think in 1868, at the corner of Wentworth and St. Philip Street, where there's a city parking garage there. But for
right.
over 100 years, it was Tecklenburg Corner Store. And so, yeah, my family was part of that history of local business. And then my grandmother's side of the family, she was a Livingston. They had a shoe store on King Street, right where that little kind of unusual parking lot is, just below Calhoun
right,
Street.
Right, right, between George Street and...
That's
yeah,
right. That was a Livingston shoe store, and that side of my family, they lived up above the shoe store. They lived on the second and third floor of the building. Unfortunately, that business did not survive the Depression, but family comes from a line of local merchants.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. Well, I would like to sort of maybe venture a little bit into the area of public works. I mean, Mayor Riley's administration has been marked by significant public works over the years. The South Carolina Aquarium, the Joseph P. Riley Ballpark, Waterfront Park, the renovation of Marion Square, the Gilliard Center. And at the same time, we've increasingly witnessed the vulnerability of this beautiful city to rising sea levels. I mean, more and more street flooding. You mentioned this earlier during those intense, I think it's been called at one time, rain bombs that come in. And some statistics show that we've gone from less than 10 flood events, 10 of those over 7-foot tides, I guess is what they are called, per year, to more than 20. And it's even overwhelmed some of the planned mechanical systems. And one of the things that we've read a lot about, and you've mentioned it in your campaign, is the concept of resiliency. And that's the ability of a city to prepare, plan for, absorb, recover from, and adapt to adverse events, such as flooding. And it's and that concept is getting more traction in cities across the country. I mean, Hurricanes Katrina and Sandy introduced, sort of really ushered in sort of a period of kind of rethinking some of the things that had been traditionally sort of thought of in terms of storm drainage. And the recent flooding in South Carolina is just that same kind of thing, I'm sure. So New Orleans has just published, as of September, its own Resilient New Orleans Plan, and you can download it from the web and sign up for updates and that sort of thing. And New York City has been developing a variety of plans that followed Hurricane Sandy. In fact, they received $60 million from the Department of Housing and Urban Development to work on resiliency following Sandy. And I don't know whether there's, you know, how deeply you've gone into this, and but I would like to talk a little bit about this, because I think we've got some things kind of on the horizon. I know that in the works, we're anticipating seeing the mechanical systems that have been planned for so long, the pumps and so forth, going into place in the very foreseeable future, actually, in the neighborhood of the medical university. Mm-hmm. But I know that things like the battery is probably due for some renovation. It might be an opportunity to sort of introduce some of these concepts where you absorbing water rather than sort of barricading things. I even saw something that suggests that we might even look at the jetties as more oyster bed kind of potential out there. But anyway, if there's anything that you've come across or found to be of interest in this area, I'd love to hear. There have been some wild ideas floated here. I've even seen somebody who wanted to basically take the crosstown out and put a canal through Charleston. So mm-hmm. That would be rather drastic. But
well, that might be. We're going to need automotive transportation for the foreseeable future, so I don't know that we'll be able to take the Septima Clark Parkway out anytime soon. That being said, and these other cities that you mentioned have kind of leapfrogged ahead in terms of planning for the future and resiliency. That's a word that doesn't seem to flow off my tongue very easily. But anyway, we're lucky. I hope we're going to get a grant. It was kind of one of the first things I did as mayor-elect to co-sign an application with Mayor Riley with the Rockefeller Foundation. We'll have hopefully a staff member for a two-year period starting sometime next year who will coordinate a resiliency effort and planning process for our city so we can play catch up a little bit with New York and New Orleans and some of these other cities. And I feel good after my initial meetings that Charleston has a good handle on emergency preparedness and how we respond to something that may happen tomorrow or a hurricane. But the longer term planning, particularly in terms of sea level rise, is something we need to get our arms around. During the campaign, as part of my flooding, addressing flooding issues, I talked a lot about trying to retrofit our drainage outlets so that we have the proper valves or backflow preventers to try to deter all this tidal water that's coming back up into our drainage system even when there's no rain. So we've seen the number of king tides increase from 4 or 5 a year 30 years ago to something like 30 to 40 a year now, and it really is having a significant impact on our systems, and that needs to be addressed, but incrementally. And all this is going to cost some more money, but just as an example, the next time we repave Lockwood Boulevard, we got to think about, well, does it make sense to to raise it up a bit, and key you know, exterior areas of the city. And the another example would be the low battery that hasn't been, there's a project in the works, and I need to look at that, but maybe before we start it, we ought to think about, well, gee, is this the time to bring that up 18 inches and go ahead and deal with that? Of course, when you do that, it impacts drainage and street, you know, the way the water, you know, works on the street. So it all ends up becoming expensive. So we're going to use that couple of millage increase that the mayor and city council just put in place to work on drainage issues. But the bottom line is we need to have a more thoughtful long-term plan, and I'm not the expert, but we have a lot of talent in this community, from NOAA out at the base, and the Sea Grants Consortium, and other, and the Coastal Conservation League, and other interested parties that I want to involve in this process over the next couple of years, and kind of catch up on our resiliency planning.
Well, and as you mentioned before, the Rockefeller Foundation has truly been kind of at the forefront of this for a number of years. I mean, they've had a website called 100 Resilient Cities going for a while. That's a global kinds of things. And if you type in, Charleston, for instance, you can end up kind of matching you to other cities that actually have similar demographics, similar kinds of issues. And, you know, you'll be matched with Rotterdam or you know, cities in other parts of the world. And
yeah. We may have to go there and study.
To go there and study, that's for sure. But it's a big topic, and at the same time, I think it's places like New York and New Orleans have actually started looking at these ways of being of bettering parks at waterfront locations and using the sort of natural environment to do some of that. And so it's not all about building walls and barricading ourselves, but
no,
I think
you're right.
there's some things that we can couple with other things. I suspect when I've thought about Joe Riley's tenure, which has been an incredible one and an inspiration as well, mm-hmm. to all of us, you know, his coming into office correlated with Robert Caro's book, The Power Broker. And I don't know whether you're familiar with that, but it tells the story of Robert Moses in New York City.
Yeah.
And I would recommend that you read it, because it tells about how he managed to finance some pretty extravagant infrastructure projects.
Yeah.
and creatively came up with some strategies during the Depression years, mm-hmm. that might make sense, because there seemed to be a little bit of an echo in some of the ways that Joe Riley's tenure was a very, I don't think creative is necessarily the way to put it, but ways of kind of putting various funding sources together, because it's a very complicated process in order to make some of these very expensive operations happen. And so I think Caro's book was in Pulitzer Prize winning in 78. So really very early.
I hadn't read the book, but I do know the story of Moses and what an impact Robert Moses and what an impact he made on New York City by way of infrastructure improvements. And that's been true of other cities, including San Francisco.
Right.
Had an outstanding, capital projects guy. And part of it is the funding.
But read Jane Jacobs too, because she did rein in his megalomaniac things a little bit, sort of after he'd been at it for 25 or 30 years. It just seems that preserving Charleston as a beautiful historic city is obviously a key to its future, and does seem to suffer from some growing pains. We've touched on some of those today.
That's right.
And people really want to be here. And I suppose we don't want to love it to death, as they say. Plus, we really should want to maintain a diverse population. There are a lot of ideas that come from getting a range of opinions, I'm sure. Right. It's certainly been our experience that if you were mayor, you've spent the campaign being visibly on the ground, which I applaud you for, seeking ideas and thoughts from many corners of the city. And I think you continue to do that. Maybe you'd like to wrap up our conversation with some insights into this concept of listening that you mentioned during the course of the campaign as being really, listening, making sure those notes are taken. And I think that will get you far. I know that seems to be a real important part of your personality. And I'm just curious if you might tell our listeners some ways that you hope that that's going to benefit your administration and also the city at large.
Well, thank you. And let me thank you again for having me on the program and for the work you've done with If I Were Mayor. And I'll also give out a shout to Ohm Radio for having this venue of community communication. I'm honored to have this incredible opportunity to serve our city as mayor. I mean, I do believe I'll find it's the best job in America. That being said, it's not about me. It's about we. It's about our community. And I have that firmly in mind and focused so that I do a good job of listening, of not only through the traditional venues of the neighborhood associations that the city has done a pretty good job at, but as I mentioned earlier, of trying to use new technology and reaching out to younger and other folks in our community who may be new to here and they haven't had the opportunity in this last 40 years to be engaged and be a part of the process. And so that involves, in today's world, you can't just rely on, I use the telephone, so I expect everybody else to use the telephone. I mean, there's so many modes of communication out there today. We have to broaden the city's reach and use the internet more effectively, make our website more interactive, use apps on the phone so we're connecting with people who have smartphones, providing streaming and interactive ability for meetings so that people who don't have the time or inclination to come to a city council meeting would have the opportunity to see and hear what's going on and maybe provide their feedback to the city, not just for council, but for a planning commission meeting or whatever. Just use the tools that are available to us now, luckily, to increase the engagement, increase the involvement, the ideas. We've got so many talented people here with great ideas. Your website, If I Were Mayor, has proven that. And to capitalize on that energy and that positive input of information and ideas. And I believe if we organize properly, that there should be new avenues for folks to participate and contribute and be a part of real positive change in our community that will improve our quality of life down the road.
Well, John,
yep.
I know we could carry on like this for a while, but we need to bring this latest segment of Small Talks, Big Ideas to a close. It's been a real pleasure.
All things must pass, as George Harrison once said.
There you go.
Good.
And it sounds like you're beginning to get your arms around your next calling. I'm looking forward to seeing really what the Tecklenburg administration does to fulfill the true spirit of Charleston as a special place for everyone to live, work, play, and thrive. I'm Whitney Powers, and that wraps up our latest segment of If You Were Mayor as part of the Small Talks Big Ideas series. Again, we invite you to go online to the Facebook page to submit your questions, feedback, and ideas for this segment. You can also find SoundCloud links to our earlier broadcast. And next week, tune in to Small Talks Big Ideas for your chance to hear from Lowcountry Local First. Thank you for tuning in to 96.3 FM Ohm Radio Charleston and supporting your local nonprofit radio station. And I think, John, you're gonna send us out with a song or a play. You're gonna play a little bit for us.
I'll play a song. There's a keyboard here in the studio.
There you go.
And I made the claim during the campaign that I was the only candidate for mayor of Charleston who can play the Charleston, so I think I'll play the Charleston
for you.
That's
great.